Coming to you live from inside your own house, I'm Tom Rich, and would you please bring some toilet paper to the upstairs bathroom? I gotta wipe. And this is the Mildly Alarming Podcast. Episode 89. Seriously, though, I gotta wipe.
Welcome back to the Mildly Alarming Podcast. I'm Johannes Stauffer.
And I'm Tom Rich.
That you are. And it just started pouring super hard as I clicked the record button. So if you hear weird staticky noise in the background, that's probably what it is.
At least, though, you won't, we're not going to have another visit from freeway noise, probably. Like, this will drown that out a little bit, maybe?
Maybe.
We'll find out.
And if the podcast stops halfway through, it's because we died, but somehow someone mixed down and uploaded the podcast anyway. Just not either of us, because we're dead.
Right, we died. We could do it as ghosts.
That's true.
If I were a ghost, that's what I would do.
That's my ghost ability, is mixing down and uploading podcasts.
That's not a great afterlife.
It's not great.
It's not a good one.
No.
But you were a deeply evil man in life, so, you know.
It's my punishment.
Right, right. Anyway, we have a new feature tonight on the Mildly Alarming Podcast that we're really excited about.
So excited?
You don't sound excited like at all.
Sorry, so excited.
There we go. Yeah.
Is that better?
Yeah. So recently we discovered that our friend Pat listens to the podcast, mm-hmm. which we didn't think was true because Pat leads an incredible life full of danger and excitement and the wooing of exotic women. And we figured he would never have time to listen to a paltry podcast such as ours.
True.
But it turns out he does.
Looks just like Louis C.K. if Louis C.K. were about a foot shorter.
And less heavy, I think, too. I think he's generally smaller
still,
than Louis.
He's like a compact little Louis C.K.
Yeah, it's like... He is sort of like a neutron version of Louis C.K., like a neutron star is to a regular star.
Like when Louis C.K. gets old enough and begins to collapse.
Right, right.
He'll become...
I really hope it turns out that neutron stars are the ones that are smaller and denser, because I'm going to feel real dumb if they're not.
Yeah. I'll think you're real dumb. If you heard Navi shout, hey, just now, that was my phone, which I forgot to mute. But talk about this feature, about Pat.
So anyway, Pat listens to the podcast now and again, so we thought... Given what we know about Pat, that we should do a little feature here. Now, Pat, as I mentioned before, has lived a truly incredible life. A lot of remarkable stories, a lot of really just quite amazing things have happened to him. So we're introducing a segment what we call Fanciful Pat Adventures. And here, what we're going to do is we're going to run down a list of, how many do we have today? Five?
Yep.
Five different adventures that Pat has had over the course of his life that we know about. One of them, however, is not going to be true. So you're going to listen to it, and then you're going to call into the podcast and let us know which one you think is not true. And the winner will get a little bit of a prize.
Yep.
And we'll announce the winner in the second half after the break.
So it's a little bit like two truths and a lie, except it's four truths and a lie.
Yeah.
So I guess I'll kick it off. Our first Pat fact is that once Pat, while wandering down the road, came across a box of kittens, three kittens, malnourished kittens, and he didn't have anything on him to feed the kittens, and they didn't seem like they were doing well, and so in order to save them, he breastfed them from his own left nipple and saved all three of those kittens.
He's just really a modern, you know... guy who does that kind of thing.
An example to us all.
An example to us all. So that's the first Pat adventure. Our second fanciful Pat adventure. One time, Pat was traveling in an antique land, walking along, and he discovered a man trapped underneath a fallen ream of printer paper. It had toppled off of a stack and trapped this man underneath it. And Pat reached down and strained and grunted and just really exerted himself, and he lifted that ream of printer paper off of that man, and that man lived to be George W. Bush.
Wow. Which one? Both of them.
Both. So that's our second Fanciful Pat adventure.
Fanciful Pat adventure number three. Once Pat ate 100 pancakes, got sick, and threw up. Now, the interesting thing about this story is that Pat was just sitting down at a local diner to eat his usual 100 pancakes. But what he didn't realize is that there was a pancake eating contest going on at the time, which he won because he didn't get sick and throw up until the 15 minutes after. And the only reason he got sick and threw up is because there was a dead cockroach in one of them.
Wow. And that's to be expected.
Yeah.
Like, yeah. Anybody would throw up at that point.
And anyone would expect a dead cockroach in their greasy diner pancake.
I wouldn't order them otherwise.
Right.
So, our fourth fanciful Pat adventure. Fourth? Yeah, we're on number four now. Once Pat was walking down the street by himself with his stave and his robe and his eyebrows and other assorted hair growing out of him.
As he does.
As he does. And he looked up at the sky and he perceived that it was about to start raining on him. And Pat was unwilling to get wet that day, so he put on a hat. He put a hat on his head and it had a wide enough brim that the rain didn't get on him.
Just stayed completely dry.
Totally dry the whole time, except the hat got wet, but Pat didn't.
Well, right. Yeah, that's what the hat's for.
Keeping Pat dry.
Put on that hat.
Put on that hat.
And fanciful Pat adventure number five. Pat was actually born as Patricia. He's been a boy the whole time. His parents just thought Patricia sounded prettier.
Yeah. So, those are our fanciful Pat adventures for this week. We have breastfed some starving kittens, lifted an entire ream of printer paper by himself to save a dying man, ate 100 pancakes, got sick and threw up, wore a hat one time, and is actually Patricia,
yep.
Because it's prettier than the boy form of that name. So if you know
Patricius,
if you know which of those fanciful Pat adventures is not true, did not actually happen to our friend Pat, give us a call at 1-800-MILDLY-ALARMING-PODCAST right now as we're recording this, and you could win a prize, a fabulous prize.
We'll let you know
after the break.
So now we begin our first segment.
Holy shit, there's actually a regular segment for this?
I hope so. What did we write down? Themes. We're talking about board game themes.
Board games?
Themes versus function. Or not necessarily versus function, but how they affect the function of the game.
Really, yeah, how the concept of theme interacts with the concept of function, and how that really reflects.
Easy for you to say.
I know, right?
Dad joke.
How that reflects on the text of the board game, and how that in turn reflects the interaction between authorial ideals in board gaming qua board gaming versus the reader, that is to say player,
or listener
experience of said board game.
You had no idea where that sentence was going when you started, did
no,
you?
No, I just sort of started it and hoped for the best.
Yeah, verbal diarrhea. Just like, oh, it's coming out now. I can't stop it.
Yep, it just had to happen. And there we go.
Plus actual diarrhea. It's all down his front now. Now, so we have these mics, and there's a thing that you often see on the front of a mic, which a lot of people call a spit guard, and those people are wrong. It's actually a pop filter. But we also have another guard beyond that, that is not a spit guard so much as a Tom's verbal diarrhea guard. It just comes out of his mouth and it gets all over the mic if we don't have the diarrhea guard there. So Tom's mic has more than one guard.
That's why my voice sounds so garbled sometimes.
Yep. Yeah. Plus he's gargling diarrhea.
We laid on a tarp too, so it doesn't get on the floor.
That's one of the grossest things I think we've talked about on the show so far. It's up there.
You want a high five for that one?
I kind of do.
True story, though, after we started doing this podcast and I started hearing my voice like recorded and listening to it and whatnot, I came real close the next to my taut to actual students to just being like, I'm so sorry I sound like this. I didn't know. I'm trying to fix it, but it's a slow process.
This is almost certainly incredibly narcissistic of me, but through this podcast, I never liked recorded playback of my own voice before. And I won't say that I love it now, but I've grown to, like, not hate it. Like, I hear the final mixdown, because I have to listen to the podcast a couple times through mixdown to make sure it uploaded right and everything. And I've come to not hate the sound of my own voice.
Which is weird, because in recording this podcast for the last 16 or 15 weeks, however the F long it's been with you, I've come to hate the sound of your voice.
Nice save. You, it took you just, the podcast is what made you hate it? It wasn't the however many years of air quotes friendship before then?
Well, you know, in those years, I never really listened. Never really paid any attention.
Yeah, you never stopped talking long
enough
for me.
Are you drinking whiskey over there?
Yeah.
Where did you get whiskey?
You've got that apple brandy on top of your fridge that apparently I'm the only one who drinks because it's been there for like a year and a half.
I still have that up there?
Yeah. You want
some?
Where
did that come from? I kind of do, but I'm not done with my G&T
yet. I think your wife got it somewhere.
Oh, well, my wife buys a lot of things that we don't drink or eat.
Yeah. It's because you're not tall enough to see the top of the fridge.
It's true. I'm a short little man.
I keep my life savings up there on your fridge.
I am 3 foot negative another foot.
Which somehow comes out to 4 foot 11.
Yeah, it's weird. I don't know how that works, but
nope.
Math.
It's the imperial system, man. Imperial it doesn't make system. Any sense. So anyway, board game
Board
themes.
Gaming. Theme. How theme impacts the game. How important is theme? How much does it matter that your mechanics match theme? What does theme do for you as a board gamist?
And is it important that a game have a theme that we'll get there, I guess.
We'll get there.
You come down to that distinction that I just recently learned about.
Which
between apparently Ameritrash and Euro games.
Oh, Ameritrash and Euro games. Yeah. So what do you think? What do you think about themes? Like you this was your idea, so I freaking hope you have something to
this
say.
This was actually your idea. You've just forgotten somehow. I love thematic games. Mm-hmm. As long as I love the theme. But I experience board games a lot. I look for theme in a board game much like I look for theme in a video game, a shooter or a very, very strategic video game does not interest me all that much, just like a very strategic board game doesn't interest me all that much. Mm-hmm. And you can kind of make those a little better by putting a good theme on them, but I really like a nice story-driven game. It's mm-hmm. like playing a movie or a book, which is why I like Arkham Horror so much. And I think that's probably a good sort of distinction to start with, whether or not you want to put the existing labels on them or not. Arkham Horror is very Ameritrash from a thematic standpoint, in that if you were to strip away the theme of Arkham Horror, it wouldn't work anymore.
The theme of Arkham Horror almost suggests the mechanics in that it should be a grinding nightmare of horror and confusion.
Right.
And Arkham is grinding. Arkham can be nightmarishly difficult, and Arkham can be deeply confusing.
Confusing.
Almost, you know, from a design standpoint, there are some big problems with Arkham. Like, you wouldn't design that game, but from a this is your experience as adventurers confronting Lovecraftian old ones perspective, it works, which is weird that they get away with that.
Yeah. And then on the flip side, if you take, say, Livestock Uprising that we talked about recently, mm-hmm. which is a pretty solid strategic strategy game. If you strip away the Livestock Uprising theme from that and slap any other theme on it, like we talked about, you've still got a pretty functional game. It's not dependent on the theme.
I wonder how much fun it is, though, with a different theme.
I think it would depend on the theme.
Like, I mean, the immediate, like, because I'm the person that I am who grew up reading all of the fantasy novels I could dredge off of the bookshelves mm-hmm. at the book place
store. You have to dredge them.
That's how you get them, yeah. Like, my immediate thought on what would I reskin Livestock Uprising as would be, you know, some sort of weird, like, elemental war type game where you've got elemental crystals you're harvesting, and then you're combining your elementals into bigger elementals. And, like, that sounds cool to me, but, like, I'm thinking that's not exciting as a theme, because I've seen that kind of theme in other board games. I'm like, it's just another one of those things. But like Livestock Uprising, I'm like, I haven't seen goats fight cows before.
That was unique.
I'm down.
It's true.
That's unique.
It does bring to mind Animal Farm.
Yeah.
But yeah, you're right. It's unique in board games. So yeah, and I think they did a good thing there. I'm not saying they should have done it differently.
Sure.
I'm just saying what they did was design a mechanically sound game that was not dependent on their theme that they chose.
And I feel like that's a really important point to make too, because so much board gaming is fantasy and sci-fi. Like, huge swaths of it you see are, it's either elves or it's Klingons. And
yeah.
You're like, I like those things. I'm down with that and I'll play that game, but there's got to be more we can do here.
Yeah. So we've done something not at all intentionally, but with Big Man, which is a game we've brought up a few times that we're working on. I think it's going to be the first one we release to the public, hopefully not too far in the future from now. We've designed a game. It's a sort of a dungeon crawl, and we've put a sort of typical fantasy dungeon crawl theme on it. But it's atypical in a lot of ways, too. Like, you're not a knight who's been trapped in a dungeon. You're like a big fat guy.
Just a big guy.
You're a big man. It's called Big Man.
You might not be a fat guy. You might just be a big guy.
But you're big.
You're large.
And a man.
And a man. Those are the two things that are central to who you are. Size and that you adopt the gender norms of maleness.
Yeah, let's not go anywhere further with that. So...
I'm saying you could be a transgender. I mean, it's fine.
Okay, all right.
You could do
all
that right,
okay.
If you wanted.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. Let's not go any further with.
Oh, just, you want to cut this bit out?
No, it's good. It's good.
Okay.
Just, I don't think it needs any more, discussion.
That's really about it?
Yep.
Okay.
You could take the game mechanically and theme it another way, and it would still work. And in fact, we've actually tried to sort of take it as a base and build other games on top of it. We actually worked on a... sci-fi-ish.
What's funny is that both of those games failed.
Oh yeah, they did. Failed miserably.
We did a game called Away Team that used a lot of that took Big Man's basic mechanics of being card driven and using the cards for a lot of purposes and whatnot, and tried to do a sci-fi thing, and it was trash. It did not work at all. And we tried it with a game called Ironclad that was fantasy. It was knights fighting goblins, and it was just butts.
Yeah, and it's true that they didn't work out. I don't think that either of them didn't work out necessarily because we tried to retheme an existing game. And we didn't just retheme it. We made a lot of other changes.
Sure, sure.
Or because those themes are bad or don't work. I think we may have tried to take too many existing tropes from those things and apply them to the basic mechanics. And that's why it didn't work. Or it could just be that we, gave up after the first or second draft on each of those. And maybe we could have, beaten our heads against them for a little longer.
Sure.
And made them work. And we may come back to them yet. Who knows? But yeah, so even for me who looks for thematically story-driven games, I think the best thing we've created so far has been relatively thematically neutral. Like, it could be, if we weren't trying to make a different game, if we were just going to take Big Man and make it, all the mechanics are the same, but now you're a knight trapped in a dungeon, or you're a, spaceman on an alien world. It's all the same. It's the same game.
It works.
It still works.
Yeah. You could do it.
So I think theme is important in certain games and not as important in others. I think the theme in... Carcassonne, not important. There's barely a theme. The theme basically influences the artwork.
Dominion
and otherwise,
like that too.
Dominion. A lot of people don't like the theme of Dominion. A lot of people think Dominion's a great deck builder, like the deck builder, really. But when you get right down to it, the artwork is fine. It's nice. It looks good. But the theme is just like, who cares? This could be anything else. The game would be the same. Which, again, isn't necessarily a bad thing. Depends
but
on what you're doing.
Let's flip that onto its head. Let's take it and lift it up off the floor and turn it over so that its head is downward on the floor.
That's how that would work.
If you let's completely strip the theme entirely from Dominion and just leave it with bare, raw mechanics. So it's the estates are now just one victory point card. And that's it. You could just give them the name one victory point, three victory point, eight, whatever it is. I don't remember how much the victory points are. But is that a game anybody would ever play at that point?
It might be. I don't know. That doesn't sound as interesting, but I think Dominion was maybe unintentionally a good place to start. I think Dominion could still be good. I think you would hit like poker levels of interest.
But see, I don't think it would ever get off the ground without the theme.
Oh,
to get your attention.
No one would want to pay the money that it costs. Like, I think the artwork, not even just the theme, but the art, like, if it were one, it's worth one victory point. It's not an estate, it's just a victory point.
Mm-hmm.
Or like the, pick a card. Like, it doesn't make any sense that the village does what it does, but because it's the village, It has a picture of a village on it, and now it's a nice looking card.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, great. What picture do we put on it if all you have is a card that does those things? I think a lot of it, in the case of Dominion at any rate, is more the aesthetic than the theme. If that makes any sense.
I don't know that I follow the distinction you're making.
So if you were to strip all theme away from Dominion,
mm-hmm.
you would have the same game mechanically. There wouldn't be any pictures anymore, because what would you depict on a card that gives you plus one
sure.
card,
okay.
plus two actions, plus one gold, other than those things?
Right, right, right.
So now the cards are like white with text on them. Or
yeah.
black with white text, or
yeah,
whatever.
And that was kind of what I'm getting at, is that the theme, it needed a theme in order to work. Like, nobody's going to play that without something on it.
Right, okay.
You might have still put some sort of symbol or whatnot on there, or some sort of highly stylized.
So we're coming at the same thing from opposite sides.
Yeah, yeah. I'm saying it needs the theme because it's never going to get off the ground without something there.
Now, if you look at other games, though, like we played a lot of Farkle. I probably played a lot more Farkle than you do.
I don't even know what that is.
You introduced me to it as Six Cubes.
Someone
created a board game out of it. So Farkle, for those who don't know, is a dice game. It's kind of like... Well, I'm told it's kind of like Yahtzee, but I've never actually played Yahtzee. But in that you have a certain number of dice and you're trying to hit a certain score, and you roll and you can re-roll some of them. And if you don't, it's like Yahtzee meets, what's the one on the bullet-shaped container that we played with?
Bang?
Bang, the dice game.
Bang, the dice game, yeah.
Or King of Tokyo. Yeah. And then there's like, you roll and then you can re-roll and then you can re-roll again. But like after a certain number of re-rolls, if you end up with nothing, you just get nothing for that. So taking it back a little bit, Farkle, I played a lot of Farkle, or Six Cubes is how we were introduced to it. And some person took basically a public domain dice game and said, we printed a board to keep track of the score mm-hmm. rather than doing it on paper, and we sold it as a board game and probably made a ton of money.
That was actually a pretty fun game, as I
recall. It is fun, which is why I started playing. I was like, wait a minute, you can just do this? Yeah, and it, like, Farkle adds a red and green or black and blue or whatever color. Mm-hmm. One of the five is red and one of the five is, we'll say, black. And if you roll a six on the red one, it ends your turn and you don't get any points.
Mm-hmm.
And if you roll a six on the black one, it ends your turn and doubles the points that you've earned. So like there's a little bit more going on, but basically there's no theme in this game at all. No theme whatsoever. Mm-hmm. You're just rolling dice trying to get, it's first person to 1,000 wins.
I remember that. I wonder if we still have that game.
You probably do. And if you look at like zombie dice, it's not exactly the same thing, but it's pretty close.
I can't believe they got away with calling that Six Cubes.
I know, like, right? Like, isn't that a terrible name?
That's a weak sauce name.
But if you take zombie dice, it's not exactly the same mechanic, but it's like dice rolling, and you re-roll some and you don't re-roll others. And if you can keep trying, hoping to get more, but there's a chance that you'll roll whatever it is, three shotgun blasts and lose all your points for mm-hmm. the turn.
I really like those push your luck kind of games.
Yeah, it's that push your luck mechanic. Zombie dice put that zombie theme on it, and now they're able to sell it. Six Cubes took straight up Farkle and added a board to it
mm-hmm.
and didn't even add a theme. They were just like, now there's a board, so you move a piece along the board instead of writing down the number of points that you have. We're able to sell it. And actually, it's funny, too, talking about theme. Zombie Dice, the makers of Zombie Dice, apparently took Zombie Dice and changed nothing about the mechanics, but reskinned it as like Deer Hunter or something mm-hmm. and stuck it in Walmart and made most of their money there, selling it to people who would never be interested in a game themed as Zombie Dice, but they're like, deer hunting, that's something I like to do. And I do the hillbilly accent, but honestly, I would like to hunt deer as well. I don't know if I would buy a Deer Hunter game, though, but whatever the case, they put a theme on it that matched the demographic that they were able to reach in that space mm-hmm. and made a ton of money on it. So that's another way in which, you know, theme does not in any way affect the game itself, but makes it appealing to the people who are going to be playing it. So if you go back to Dominion,
mm-hmm.
Dominion doesn't have to have a fantasy theme or any theme. It's not going to interest a lot of people with no theme. It's going to interest the sort of dorks that play tabletop games with a fantasy theme. You could probably make a Deer Hunter theme for Dominion and sell it in Walmart.
I want badly to make a Deer Hunter theme for Dominion and sell it in Walmart.
Yeah.
Donald X, I forget what your last name is, guy that made Dominion, call me. We're going to get this done.
Yeah.
I didn't know you wanted to hunt deers.
It seems fun. I don't know. My dad used to hunt. I never got to.
Really?
Yeah.
Hmm. I've never been hunting either.
I grew up on a pretty big yard, and my dad used to be able to hunt in our backyard, and then like subdivisions went up all around us, and so now he can't. And so now if you want to hunt, you have to like go hours away to public land,
sure,
or find someone who owns a lot of land who wants to let you hunt on it who isn't hunting it themselves, and that's hard to do.
It's inconvenient, really.
So like I own a gun. I have a hunter safety permit or whatever, but I've never used it for anything.
I'm a lousy shot, so.
I'm not. For a blind guy, I'm a pretty good shot.
Well, you know, that's interesting, because Teddy Roosevelt was also was probably about as blind as you are, honestly,
yeah,
if not more. Actually, he was more blind than you are later in life, because he had one of his retinas detached during a judo match.
Of course he did.
But he was a pretty good shot, too. It's almost like if you have to overcome that difficulty seeing to begin with, you wind up practicing the skills more and eventually hit a better shot than somebody who's already got great eyesight and can use that to kind of compensate for other failures or other insufficiencies in their own talents.
Yeah, could be. So I've kind of bogarted this half of the episode with my words.
Mm-hmm.
You have anything else to talk about with theme?
I love theme. I like it a lot. Like it always, almost always when I'm designing something, that's where it starts. There's always a theme I have in mind right from the beginning. But conversely, I find that when the more theme heavy I'm starting out from, the less effectively the game comes together. Like Big Man, when we were starting on it, the initial idea didn't really have a theme at all. It just had, we want to use cards for a lot of different things all at once.
Yeah.
We want them to be done part of the dungeon, and you can use them to move around, and you can use them to fight monsters. We want to get everything we can onto one card. And the theme kind of emerged as we were working on it.
Well, the theme was sort of an accident, because Big Man was already a joke. Because remember, we were going to try to do like, I'm a musician and Tom's a writer, and we have this crackpot idea, much like our designing board games crackpot idea, and our having
a podcast
crackpot idea, to try to do a musical comedy album, and Tom would write the funny joke words, and I would put them to music.
I remember that.
And you wrote this like concept album about like a lumberjack bar fight or something.
It was called a Hatchet Fight at the Lumber Mill.
Exactly. And one of the songs was like, you're a big man, right? Didn't that come from that?
Yeah, you're a big, big man. You're a big, big man. You're a big, 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 big man.
Yeah. See, I never knew musically what you were trying to do with that.
I don't know
it
enough.
Didn't go anywhere.
I don't know enough about music to write it.
Right.
To write lyrics for it and have any kind of sense of how it would fit to a sound.
Yeah. So we're both sounding probably deeply stupid for even attempting this in the first place. I was hoping, I think, that Tom's ability as a writer who had studied poetry and written some decent poetry and some hysterical and not good by any meaningful metric poetry, that we could do something with it. It was probably my fault and lack of time and laziness. But at any rate, Big Man came out of like a previous joke from a previous failed venture that was just like an accidental theme that came up because we were cracking a joke about it anyway.
You should just be, what if you were just a huge man running around?
Yeah.
So let that be a lesson to you, kids. Write everything down. Keep everything you write down. And eventually it might turn into something else that you can't do anything with.
Record yourself when you converse. Grow to love the sound of your own voice. Become completely self-obsessed. No one will love you.
Do a lot of drugs.
We're not there yet.
Oh, we're not at that point. But
when we hit real podcasting fame, I plan to spend all of my podcast dollars on heroin.
Listen, you have a G&T in one hand and a glass of whiskey in the other.
Actually, both are empty. It's just two empty glasses.
That doesn't help. That doesn't help your case that you've already drained both of them.
Actually, also, I never had a G&T and a whiskey at the same time. I had a whiskey and I had a water that I poured into the G&T glass that I had already emptied before we began recording.
Also, for the record, we just came back from the bar.
Had lunch and beer.
Yes. The Mildly Alarming Podcast is fueled almost entirely by alcohol.
The Mildly Alarming Podcast is brought to you by booze. Have you ever anything? Who cares? Go drink. Booze.
In case you hadn't noticed.
Well, that's what we have to say about theme for now. If you have anything you would like to add.
Is that the end of the segment already?
Yeah, dude, we're at a half an hour.
Really? Wow.
Yep. We have more important things to discuss. It's not important.
There's nothing important that ever goes on this podcast. At all.
But if you have anything you'd like to add, hit us up on Twitter at mildlyalarming.
Send us an email at mildlyalarmingshow@gmail.com.
That was deeply confusing. You could also leave a comment on the website at www.mildlyalarming.com or on Facebook at facebook.com/ I'm pretty sure it's Mildly Alarming Show, but I'm not really sure and I'm too lazy to look. Or you could write it on the side of a pig and release it in a public high school. We'll find it.
We are at all public high schools.
Only ones with pigs in them. Anyway, we'll see you after the break.
After the break.
The Mildly Alarming Podcast is brought to you by the Mildly Alarming Podcast in a parallel dimension. There, everything is the same, except I'm a friendly Triceratops, and they don't have Cool Ranch Doritos. Alternate Universe Mildly Alarming Podcast. It's okay, I guess.
Welcome back to the Mildly Alarming Podcast, ladies and gentlemen, the show that will remove the hair from 90% of your body but make the last 10% grow to extraordinary lengths. I'm Tom Rich.
That is amazing. And I'm Johanna Stauffer.
And we are here. We're talking to you. We're telling you about stuff. We're having a wonderful time. So the first thing we got to do on this second segment of the show tonight is announce the winners of the Fanciful Pad Adventures contest.
Yeah, it's true. We had callers call in.
So we ran down five different adventures that our friend Pat has actually had in his life. Well, four that he had and one that he didn't. And we had people call in and guess which one didn't actually happen.
Who was our, I was going to say lucky, but that's unfair. Who was our intuitive and accurate caller who got the right answer?
It was actually Gary Smoulihan.
Well, way to go, Gary.
Good job, Gary. Gary called in and had deduced that the time that Pat wore a hat was not actually true. And that's the case. Pat never wears hats, not even once.
Can you imagine Pat wearing a hat?
It would look ridiculous. Why would that happen?
It's crazy.
It would never go down.
That guy doesn't wear hats.
No, he doesn't wear hats at all. But Gary figured that out, so congratulations, Gary. You are our winner on this episode of the Mildly Alarming Podcast. And as your prize, which you will receive in the mail, you win a free sea turtle wrench, useful for getting your hands out of sea turtles.
Which is useful.
If you're Gary.
Yeah.
All right, let's move on to the next portion of the show. We actually have a question for the listeners before we get into the real topic of the second half of the show.
We want to know what you think here.
So I have a friend or an acquaintance named Late Night.
A friend or an acquaintance. Your choice, listeners.
Yeah, you can make that call as you determine. His name is Late Night. That's what we used to call him because you could always meet him up in the laundry room of the dorms late at night at like 3 a.m. if that's when you happen to be washing your skivvies. And Late Night posted recently a truly baffling status on Facebook. One, I didn't understand what he meant by it.
Nor did I.
And I'm hoping that some of you folks could, clarify it for me, what Late Night meant by this. And Late Night writes, "One rule for driving cross-country, other than checking fluids and stocking up on Red Bulls, is make sure you have a white t-shirt on. It doesn't matter if it's just on under another shirt or not. Just make sure you have a white t-shirt on, just in case." End quote. There's no more. It doesn't go anywhere from there.
Just in case what?
I don't know. I'm not sure what circumstance Late Night thinks is going to go down on the highways and byways of the United States of America that necessitates a white t-shirt.
Maybe if you start oozing blood out of your pores, you'll know because your shirt was white when you put it on, but now there's blood
spots on
it.
Now it's red, yeah. Maybe. I'm wondering if, like,
you get stabbed and don't notice it, but then you're like, oh, well, there's blood, there. Blood spot.
Yeah. I'm wondering if he, like, walked into a truck stop somewhere and he saw, like, eight dudes in white t-shirts and was like, oh, I guess when you're driving, you've got to wear
gotta
a white
that.
T-shirt.
You got
to
do that.
But when he went to post about it, he didn't include that crucial information to let us in on what was going on.
It seems important to an otherwise incredibly specific post that he put on the internet yeah. for everyone.
And like, but you know, I would think, I would agree with you that maybe it's a blood thing. Like if you get stabbed or whatnot, you want to see the blood, but except he says it doesn't matter if you're wearing it under another shirt or not.
Well, yeah, but if you get stabbed, like it's, you know, it's going through your shirts wherever they are.
Yeah, but if it's going through your shirts, but the only reason a white t-shirt matters in that scenario is if you can see the blood. And if you've got, you know, a powder blue polo or a black button down on over it, you're not going to be able to see the blood.
Yeah, but maybe he's assuming he's some sort of ubermensch and will only notice his stab wound when he gets to his motel and takes his top layers off.
And that he won't bleed out in the meantime?
Or maybe, yeah, I got no other reason.
Yeah, I got, we're baffled, frankly, by what this white t-shirt situation is.
Actually, the proper past tense of baffle is buffle.
Buffle.
So we're buffle.
We are buffle. And so if you can shed some light on what Late Night had to say, I would just post a comment responding and asking him what he means by that, but I don't want to.
Yeah, no one wants that, actually.
I don't really want to know from Late Night's mouth directly. Good old Late Night.
Late Night.
Yep.
With Late Night. What if he had his own show?
Late.
Just be called.
Welcome to Late Night with Late Night. I'm Late Night, and this is Late Night. Good to have you around.
I'd give it a try. Yeah, give it a go.
He was kind of a strange guy. Like he told some weird stories. He might have had a cool show.
Did they involve white t-shirts?
Not that I remember. He was a DJ at the college radio station.
Yeah.
Yeah. I never listened to his show.
I assume all of those people are serial killers. Have you ever listened to college radio, particularly Late Night college radio?
You know, despite going to college for 6 years, I don't think I ever actually did.
Yeah, they're all serial killers.
All of them?
Yep.
All right. Do we have a topic for the second half, or were we just going to talk about Late Night and serial killing and white t-shirts the whole time?
I was hoping you were going to say, or were we just going to talk about grilling? Because that's our actual ridiculous topic.
Ah, grilling. So welcome, ladies, gentlemen, boys, girls, assorted barnyard animals and sentient plants, to a brand new segment on the Mildly Alarming Podcast, Cooking with Clowns.
Probably the only instance of this segment.
No, we're going to do it every week. It's great.
It will never end.
It's so good.
We're going to talk about grilling. It's summertime when you should be grilling.
Summertime, grilling. You should be taking your food outside, putting it on a thing like a lattice of metal bars above a charcoal fire or propane if you're into that, and cooking it that way instead
Listen,
of cooking it inside.
If you have an electric kitchen range outside of your house, you should be cooking on it in the summer. Summer is terrible, but the one thing that's good about it is cooking on a grill outside.
Well, now there's actually, I don't know if it's one other thing, but there's a closely related thing that's good about summer that needs to be brought up.
Yeah.
And that is the 4th of July.
That's true. That is great. Explosions.
Now, we do have some international listeners. We've noticed people listening from Austria, Germany, the UK, I think India and South Africa, and a couple other places.
We've got, yeah, South Africa. We've got Japan. We've got quite a few listening from Japan,
really?
Inexplicably. Yeah.
Interesting.
Serbia's a little lower on the list, but it sticks out with Romania. Yeah.
Okay. Serbia, yeah. Romania. Did we have any New Zealanders or Australians?
I didn't see any of those, but that doesn't mean they're not there.
Okay. Well, anyway, wherever you're from, we're from Michigan in the United States, as you may have picked up along the way.
Kind of northward on the globe.
In the northern of the two hemispheres
yeah.
that are split that way. But it's good to have you here if you're not from the United States. But one of the things that we as Americans and we as the men that we are like best about summer is the 4th of July. It's the best holiday.
I need to bring this up briefly that I understand that in New Zealand and Australia and points south, it is not summer right now.
Oh, good point.
When I brought up Serbia and Romania, I was not assuming that they were Southern Hemisphere, just that they were not Michigan.
Fair enough. Good to know. We do know geography here on the Mildly Alarming Podcast.
A little bit.
Some of it, yeah. Yeah, we get that it's winter in the Australias and the New Zealands
right
now. I
thought they just didn't have seasons.
They just have the same thing all year round?
It's just Australia.
No, because like Australia, when it's winter here, it's summer in Australia, and it's like psychotically end times hot, isn't it?
I'm pretty sure it's just always like that in Australia.
Like, I'm pretty sure I've read about people's sandals melting off their feet in Australia onto the pavement.
Yeah. That seems right.
Like, I think I've read that story. Like, Australians, if you could correct me on that, please do, but...
Plus, there's these birds. I think it's the kookaburra, the one that they have that, like... delightful song. He sits in the old gum tree.
That's Kookaburra, I think.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure they're the ones that just swoop down from the skies all the time and just take things. They're just like, oh, look, you got something shiny on your head. Maybe it's hair. I don't care. I'm a kookaburra. I'm going to attack it.
It's a magical place.
Yeah. Australia, where everything is trying to kill you.
Everything is. All the time.
Forever.
But grilling.
Grilling!
So we like the 4th of July.
So Australia probably gets to grill all the time, but 4th of July...
I want
to
move there. Can we move there and grill all the time?
No, that sounds horrible. Actually, Australia sounds pretty cool. If Australia were like a little further south, like where Antarctica is, and it were always cold, I'd love it.
But then you couldn't grill.
You can still grill in the cold.
But you don't. I've been to your home. In the winter, you don't grill.
January. I have. It has happened. See, but not as frequently.
See, I wanted to grill this winter because I wanted to be that guy who was out there in like subarctic temperatures with his grill. But the problem I ran into is that my grill is tiny.
Yeah.
And it's just a little like ground thing. And so I would have had to sit in the snow to do it. And then my butt would have got wet. And that's no fun.
You know how we had like... It wasn't as bad as a couple of years ago when we had like tornadoes all up ends.
Mm-hmm.
But this year we had like... It got a little warm and then all of a sudden it snowed again. And then... It got warm and then it froze again, so the snow had like an inch of ice on top of it.
I remember that, yeah.
And it looked like an ice rink. So my buddy Victor, he posted a picture of his like back porch and then backyard with all the ice beyond it. But the back porch was important because he was grilling. He was grilling in the snow, and it was like a beautiful, shiny sheen of ice and his open barbecue, just like, I'm doing it. It's spring now. I don't care what you say, weather.
Yeah. But we like to grill a lot. We like to go out and do it. It's a good time. We both enjoy it as a hobby.
True
facts. As a way of feeding our family.
Mm-hmm.
Families. We have two separate families. We don't have one big family that lives in a compound and occasionally gets into gunfights with the government. That doesn't happen. But we like to grill. We like to grill a lot. So,
true.
So, yeah.
Because we have a board game podcast, we thought it would be a great idea to talk about grilling.
Yeah, so like, I do charcoal grilling myself.
As do I.
So I thought that would be a point where we could talk a little bit about the difference, but we both like charcoal, so never mind.
Charcoal is better. I had a gas grill. It was given to us for free, and then it sat on our porch, and I think I used it 1.5 times.
Full disclosure... I like charcoal mainly because it takes like a half hour, 20 minutes to heat up.
Yeah.
And that's a half hour, 20 minutes where I have an excuse to just sit outside with a book. And I'd like, no, I'm not just hanging out with a book out here hiding by myself. I'm waiting for the grill to heat up. I'm just keeping an eye on it.
See, we differ here because I like charcoal because it imparts some smoky flavor.
Mm.
And while it is heating up, I sit inside in the air conditioning with my book.
Oh, see, I try not to turn on the air
at all. Where I don't have to be outside. Where it is warm and there are alive things.
Nah, I try not to turn on my air at all if I can help it.
Yeah, yeah. You are your father's son.
It's true. He I almost said he birthed through. That's not right.
That's not how that works.
I wasn't birthed at all. C-section, yo.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And when he came out, he was in an egg.
I was removed. Not unborn.
In an egg. Just, you had to crack the shell with a big spoon.
I used my beak.
Oh, you cracked it.
Yeah,
congratulations. I thought the doctor did it.
No, I cracked it off with the beak, and then at 6 months, the beak, you know, kind of turns gray and falls off, and then I looked like a normal person from there on out.
You still don't look like a normal person. I'm sorry. I know your parents have probably told you that for years so that you would feel a little okay about yourself, but no.
Do I still have the beak?
No, the beak is gone.
Oh, good, good.
The horns have remained.
Oh, it's the horns. They
and
do
the
it.
Scaly skin. Yeah.
Yeah, well, you know, what are you going to do? It's you play the hand that fate deals you.
Yep.
And you grill the meat that
on
fate deals
charcoal.
You. On charcoal, because charcoal's better than propane.
It's true.
So you know what? We're talking about grilling. That's our topic for the second half here. We should probably give our readers some of our favorite grilling techniques and our favorite grilling meats.
For frick's sake, there's still listeners. Good Lord. What do you think this is?
I know.
It's not a blog.
I know.
It's not a book. It's not a newspaper. Not a magazine. You got to put some kind of speakers kind of sort of close to your ear holes to hear it. Your eyes are not involved.
Well, their eyes are a little involved. They had to click the button.
Maybe someone else clicked the button.
Are you implying that our readers are...
All of them are blind.
All of them are blind and have somebody else start the podcast for them?
It's true. And very scary.
We're not afraid of the blind.
We need to get to grilling.
Grilling. Okay. So, what do we know about grilling? Do we know anything about it?
Probably not as much as a lot of other people. But we should probably just hit on a couple grilling recipes.
Grilling recipes. So
things we like to grill.
Here's one thing that I learned about grilling over the last year or so, because I've only had a grill of my own for about a year at this point. It's that once you've got your coals going and they're hot and they're you got that nice red color on them and the gray and all that.
Don't pee on them.
And they're doing their thing. You should you remove your top grilling surface and then you scoot them over along a side of your grill, like around half to two thirds of it, maybe less, depending on how much you have to cook. And that way you've got a cool side of the grill. And that way, if you've got some meat that cooks less fast than other meat, you can move it over to that cool side where it'll stay warm. Like there'll be enough heat to keep it from getting cold on you, but it won't continue to cook and get all dry and grody.
So it bears mentioning. Tom cooks on how big would you say your grill is? Maybe a foot, a little more than a foot?
Maybe more than a foot, but it's certainly not. It's about that, yeah.
Like probably a 12 to 14 inch Weber grill.
It's little.
It is little. Mm-hmm. It doesn't matter what you do with your coals once they're lit. Any food you put on that grate is close to the coals.
Well, but see, I would have thought that too, but I've done it. I've mm-hmm. moved the coals to one side and then shifted food to the other, and I've noticed the difference in how fast and what happens to the food from there on out. So, I mean, even... And that might be just I'm using a relatively small amount of coals, too.
Yeah.
Like, I'm using an appropriate amount for the size of my grill. But, it's certainly more pronounced with a larger grill. But the point, more broadly, regardless of your grill size, is to make sure you've got that kind of warming space available on your grill. So that if you've got a particularly thick chicken breast or whatever, you can shift it. You can move it. You can make that hot swoop and swap.
If you've got a less round grill... most gas grills have this, but a lot of charcoal grills with a more like a barrel shape to them have mm-hmm. this. They have a warming rack on the top.
Yeah, mine doesn't have that.
Yeah, mine doesn't either. So I have a more standard, I think it's a 36-inch
Yours is pretty big, yeah.
Weber grill. Actually, it's not all that big compared to the one they have at the hardware store by my house, which is about 4 feet across. It is a monster of a circular Weber
grill. You want to buy it, don't you?
I do. I run into a problem already where I cook food for people on the grill and then the charcoal just gets to the perfect point and I'm like, I could cook like 10 more steaks on this.
Mm-hmm.
I could
there's do nobody else
so much, but no one's here and I don't have anything to put on it. So I guess I'll just try to put them out. I think with like a 3 to 4 foot grill, I would really run into that problem in a big way. Plus, I probably need a whole bag of charcoal
You would need a whole bag of steak every time you cooked, just to make sure you don't have to
cook. I'm okay with that. Yeah.
And that was how Johannes died of heart failure like 2 months later. We found an entire hunk of beef in his aorta. How did it get in there?
I put it in there through my mouth.
Don't judge me.
So we don't have a whole lot of time left already.
Really?
So, yeah, it's true.
Wow.
I've got two quick things I want to talk about. How many do you have recipe-wise? Things you like to cook on
you
the grill.
You go ahead.
All right. My two favorites are salmon on a cedar plank. If you've never cooked on a cedar plank, do it. It is literally a like quarter-inch thick plank of cedar wood. You soak it in water. You get your grill good and hot. You put your salmon, or it works with chicken too. Doesn't work so well with red meat because cedar doesn't really impart all that much flavor. Mm-hmm. Just something that already has that much flavor. You cook it in there, and it as it cooks, there's not a lot of direct heat onto the salmon or chicken or whatever you're smoking, cooking, but there's a lot of smoke, and so you get a really smoky flavor to what you're cooking, and you can take it off without any like charred, seared. Mm-hmm. Surfaces, and I got cedar planks to do salmon last weekend, and then I cooked like three more things on them because they just don't burn up all that fast. So you can get a fair amount of use out of cedar planks. My other thing is hickory, or I've done apple wood, though it's not quite as strong a smoke, but with wood chips, again, you soak them, you throw them right on the coals, and you cook. I've been cooking steak over them.
Ooh.
And it's delicious.
That is good.
And you can do so with a 36-inch grill. I put the steaks around the outside so they don't cook as fast. I know that generally they say, you know, sear your steak and lock the juices in. But once you get to a certain temperature, smoking something doesn't work anymore because the juices that were inside start coming out because of vapor pressure. So I like to cook them a little bit slower when there's smoke going on and make some really nice, just rub sea salt into them. I don't put pepper on until after it's cooked because black pepper tends to just burn up, and I smoke them for maybe 15, 20 minutes, and then they're just incredible steaks.
Majestic.
That's how I like to grill.
I would make 2 points about grilling that I feel that I have learned in my grilling times in life.
Do it.
The first one is to have, when you're doing your chicken breasts and whatnot, I found when I first started out on this, it's really easy to overcook them bad lads.
Yeah.
Because you don't want your chicken to be undercooked because you'll get salmonella and die.
Right.
Or whatever salmonella does to you. I don't actually know. But this is something Johanna showed me. If you've got something you can just keep brushing onto that thing, like a sauce or whatever, and just keep every 3 minutes or so or whatever, every little bit, just flip it over, brush some sauce on, flip it over, brush some sauce on, it'll just keep absorbing more and more sauce because chicken is an infinite sponge. Hold on, I just have to pause a moment and savor what I just said.
I'm going to write a song called Chicken is an Infinite Sponge.
I want you to write that song.
I'm going to dedicate it to you. I want it played at both of our funerals.
But you just keep brushing something onto it and keep flipping it until it's done all the way through. And you can use a nip and peek or a meat thermometer or whatever you want to figure out when it's done. And it'll just keep absorbing that flavor and that moisture, and it'll taste amazing. It's so fantastic. And the second thing I would say is that I don't have the greatest taste for meat to begin with. Like, I don't notice the difference between different cooks or flavors or cuts of meat and whatnot, as much as Johannes does, certainly, as much as people do generally. I would say to you, though, if you are the well-done to medium-well kind of guy, which I was for many, many years. If
you're like, a communist.
No, you're fine. You're fine. Just shut up. Let me talk to my people. You know, I would say give it a go one step down the line from where you were. If you're like a well-done person, try medium-well. Give it a go a couple of times over to see how it goes for you. If you were medium-well, take it down to just straight medium, maybe even to medium-rare if you're feeling adventurous. And I say that because the other... A couple of weeks ago, I made steaks for my wife and I on my grill, and those bad lads charred up on the outside almost instantly. I don't know what I did to make the fire this hot, but it just burned them almost immediately. And so I didn't want to leave them on for too long because I didn't want, you know, a layer of charcoal on the outside. That would taste grody. And so I took them off fairly soon, sooner than I was really happy with. And so they were pretty rare, extremely rare by my standards. By everybody else's standards, they were a little... They were done just right to a little bit overdone. And they were good. Like, I'm like, this is good. I enjoy this steak more than I generally enjoy steak. And I like steak pretty well. So, you know, give it a try. Especially when you get that smoky flavor going through it from the smoke of the charcoal fire. That's pretty good, too. And I actually thought of another one, if you don't mind.
Go for it.
Asparagus is fantastic grilled.
I was going to bring that up, too.
Yeah. Oh, did you want to talk about asparagus?
No, go for it.
Okay. The other thing I had was... a good thing you can make, too, to go with your stuff, because one of the things I run into trouble with is making sure everything gets done on my grill around the same time, because mine is so small.
Mm-hmm.
Johannes doesn't have this problem, because he's got a full-size grill.
Yep.
But in Mike, I imagine you run into it now and again, too, where, you know, you've run out of room to put all the stuff on, and then you've got to cook your veggies after or whatever.
Yep.
One thing you can do is potatoes. You take your taters, you boil them a little bit so they're soft. You cut into them, not all the way through, so that they can kind of splay out of it. I think there's a term for it, but I don't remember what it is.
I've never done this before, but I've had it at Tom's house, and it's amazing.
You cut them open. You've got the potato, and you're cutting it across the short side of it so that it kind of splays open, and you can tuck butter or spices or cheese in between each one.
Or any kind of combination of those
things. Yeah, just put it in there. Wrap it in a double layer of tin foil. Spray the tin foil down a little bit so it doesn't get too stuck, although you're going to lose some stuff to getting stuck on the tin foil. And then pull all of the racks out of your grill and put the potatoes way down there right in the coals.
Mm-hmm.
You can get, you know, 4 or 5 down there, and it's not going to impact the temperature at all that you get for your meat. And really, it almost doesn't matter how long you put them in for, as long as you put enough stuff in there. I like to put a little olive oil on them too to make sure they've got enough moisture that they don't get real dry. But then you bring them out. Once you have the meat's done, it's hard not to cook them right in that sense.
True.
You would have to really take them out almost immediately not to have them cooked well enough. And I don't know that you really could overcook them.
No, not really.
Not in any reasonable
amount
of time.
If you've overcooked a potato, you've taken a lot of time.
You've made a point of it, yeah.
And now it is a brick of charcoal, which you can use to cook the next thing you put there in your grill.
And then, you know, you get them out of the tinfoil, you put one on your plate next to your steak or your asparagus or whatever you got, and it's good. Like, it comes out nice. Everything soaks up real good. The tater gets nice and soft. Good stuff.
I've never done that myself, but I've had them at Tom's house, and they're great. A potato just, like, soaked in cheese and some spices and... Yeah.
Butter. You got to put some butter in there, too.
Yeah, butter's good.
You know, I would imagine even the potato just by itself wouldn't be bad if you were, like, health conscious. But you're grilling. You're not health conscious.
No.
You're glory conscious.
It's true.
At that point. What else about grilling? What else have we got?
We're running out of time here, but a quick point that you basically just can't cook asparagus wrong either. The only thing you've done wrong cooking asparagus is either you've undercooked it, so just leave it all longer than you think.
Honestly, it's not too bad, even just
it's pretty
straight
good.
Out the bunch.
It's pretty good.
When I'm making asparagus, I usually eat a couple just by themselves.
Yeah. So if you undercook it, it's just crunchier. It's still good. If you overcook it, it's become a piece of charcoal and it will fall through the grate and you'll never know. And if it's too skinny, it will fall through the grate and you'll have less asparagus than you did before. But other than that, put some olive oil and some sea salt on it. You're good to go.
You are good to go.
You can straight up burn it for, you know, 5-10 minutes. And it'll just come out and you'll be like, this is good asparagus.
It's good asparagus.
Did it right.
You did that right, man.
So grill some things.
Grill it. Buy yourself a grill if you don't have one. If you do have one, buy yourself some stuff to make. And let us know how your grilling worked out for you.
Yeah. If you have things to recommend to us about to grill, to cook on a grill, which is called grilling. That's what that word means. Hit us up on Twitter at Mildly Alarming.
You can send us an email at mildlyalarmingshow@gmail.com.
Or you can leave a comment on the website at www.mildlyalarming.com or on facebook.com/mildlyalarmingshow or find us on iTunes or Stitcher. Leave us just a 5-star review because you think we're so great and leave your favorite grilling recipe in the comments.
And if you see, you know, smoke rising in the distance, come on over. I've got my grill going. We'll have a good time.
It's Tom's grill.
Split some beer. It'll be nice.
So we'll see you next week.
See you next week.
Mildly Alarming Podcast.
It's a little alarming.
It could be more alarming.
It could be more, yeah.
But it could be less.
True.
Toodles.
Cheers.
Can't hold the signal for long. This is the actual Alternate Universe Mildly Alarming Podcast. Everything you've been told is a lie.
We still have Cool Ranch Doritos. They rule our world with a savory fist. Don't experiment with self-dipping sentient corn chips. The cost is too high.
I'm losing the signal.
Gary Smulahan gives them the codes. Hurl them into a volcano before it's too
late. They're at the door.
Stop the Cool Rancheros at all costs.